that in about a half hour.
You got it. It's that attitude right away.
We're going to call this meeting of State Governments and Veterans Budget Division. To order, it's January 31st, 2013. It's about 3:10. And we have a quorum present. Members, today we have two things on our agenda. First, we're going to have a brief presentation from the governor's office and review their budget. For today, we are handing out just the governor's office budget information and a preliminary spreadsheet for the entire division. To my right is our budget book. Does everybody have a budget book?
We're not for today. So.
Not for today, but eventually everybody will have a budget book. And we'll be going through. We have 32 jurisdictions, so we'll get that going. Second, today we hear Senate File 58, chief authored by Senator Eaton. Well, I don't see her yet, but I'm sure she'll be here. And that's ratifying the state employee contracts. Senator Chamberlain, Senator Metzen, and I were at the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations Monday. Had a good discussion when the subcommittee approved these contracts. So with that, with us today is Tina Smith, Chief of Staff to Governor Dayton, and Paula Brown, Operations Director for the Office of the Governor. Ladies, would you please state your name for the record, and whenever you're ready, that'd be great to hear from you.
Thank you very much. This is Tina Smith, and I am Chief of Staff for Governor Mark Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Yvonne Prettner-Solon.
Good afternoon. I'm Paula Brown, Director of Operations for the Governor and Lieutenant Governor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be with you this afternoon, and I'm happy to provide a brief presentation about the budget for the Office of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor and answer any questions that you may have. I have also provided in your material some background information on government reform, which has been a big priority for our administration and the governor's office over the last 2 years. And I'm happy to talk about that if you have time, or can come back later and talk about it another time if that works well for you. I'd like to just acknowledge Paula Brown, who's the Director of Operations. Paula has worked in the governor's office under, I believe we are the third administration that Paula has worked under, beginning with Governor Ventura and then Governor Pawlenty and now us. And she provides a really crucial role in helping us to make sure that we are operating efficiently and well and following all of the rules. And I just want to thank her for being with me here today and for her guidance over the last 2 years. The governor and the lieutenant governor, along with their staff, of course, oversee the executive branches of state government. And the governor, our responsibilities are specifically with the governor to appoint state department heads, members of state boards and commissions, and judges to the state's 10 judicial districts, the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court when there are vacancies. The governor also appoints about 1,300 citizens to 140 state boards and commissions. He serves as chair of the State Executive Council, the State Board of Investment, the Land Exchange Board, and the Board of Pardons. In addition, he serves as Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard and oversees emergency response for the state. His office, under his leadership, issues extradition papers and proclamations and writs of special elections. And we also, in addition, inform the legislature of the general condition of the state, review, veto, or sign into law legislation and rules, call special sessions of the legislature when needed, and consult with the 201 legislators during the annual legislative sessions. The governor's office, in addition, responds to over 100,000 constituent requests for help and service in an average year. The governor's office budget is funded through a direct appropriation from the general fund, as well as payments made to a special revenue fund. The recommended budget for the Office of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor for this coming biennium is a total of $7.8 million. That includes about $6.4 million from the general fund and about $1.4 million from the special revenue fund. Those of you who are familiar with how the governor's office budget works knows that for many years there was a practice of the governor's office tapping into agency funds in order to help support the work of the governor's office. And I believe in 2008, or somewhere in there, that practice was changed to be more specifically transparent about the total sources of funding for the governor's office. And that was the reason why there is the special revenue fund as well as the general fund. This money funds not only the operations of the governor's office and the lieutenant governor's office here in the Capitol, but it also provides staff support at the residence as well. I want to just...
Smith, just as we go through this, you noted that the recommended expenditures for the coming year is $7,826,000. And that is different from 2012, 2013. Is that there any particular reason why that's less? Or
there is. It has to do with money that was rolled over from one biennium to the next biennium,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Other than that rollover amount, the budget that the governor proposed for his office is essentially the same as it was in the last biennium. And I'd also like to point out that this budget request for 2014-15 is lower than any appropriation request for this office since 1996-97. It funds approximately 38 full-time staff members, as I said, including the few staff that support the residents. And that number also includes the governor and the lieutenant governor as part of that FTE. I'll just finish this short summary by saying that about 80% of our budget is spent on personnel costs, and the rest of it is for, as I said, a part of it has to do with the residents, but most of it is for expenses associated with the offices here in the Capitol.
Questions? Ms. Brown, do you have anything you want to add to the discussion here? Or,
I don't think so. I think Tina Smith did a fine job.
Good. If there isn't any questions, that's good. Good for you. Good for us. But we'll look forward to hearing from you at a later date.
That sounds fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. And don't hesitate to ask any questions at any time.
Okay. Great.
Yep.
She's coming down.
All right. The second part of our agenda. I don't see Senator Eaton here. Well, either that, or we could start the review of the contracts, and then with us for the Senate File 58, which Senator Eaton will be down here in a second. But with us today is our testifiers, Greg Hubinger of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and Barbara Holmes, Assistant Commissioner of Labor Relations for the MMB. So I think probably what would be the way to proceed here is for Greg, Mr. Hubinger, to kind of go over the contracts that you're going to be presenting to us today.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I help staff the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations, which has the statutory responsibility to review and approve labor contracts between the state and its employees. I thought that I would just briefly review what the process is for how contracts get negotiated and then ask Assistant Commissioner Holmes to talk about the specifics of the proposed contracts themselves.
That would be great. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, for those of you who may not know, we start with the executive branch, which has about 50,000 state employees. About 90% of those employees are represented by one of 10 state employee unions. Minnesota Management and Budget represents the administration and negotiates contracts with each of those 10 unions. Those contracts are generally for two-year periods, although they're not required to be, and those contracts generally follow the state's biennium. Last summer, MMB negotiated.
Excuse me, Mr. Hubinger. We have Senator Eaton here. Senator, you want to stand up? Now we're going to officially represent or present Senate File 58, Senator Chris Eaton. I'm going to let you say a few words, Senator, and then we'll turn it back over to Mr. Hubinger. Excuse me, Mr. Hubinger. We should start that way, I think. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I have here is Senate File 58 is amended, and it's the labor contracts for public employees plus the commissioner's plan and the manager's plan. And it's long overdue in passing them, and I'm hoping that we can progress today.
Thank you, Senator. And go ahead, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, so last summer, Minnesota Management and Budget negotiated tentative agreements with two of the 10 state unions, AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and with the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. AFSCME represents clerical and technical service and healthcare non-professional employees, and MAPE represents professional employees in most state agencies. Those contracts were submitted to the Subcommittee on Employee Relations late last summer, and in August, the subcommittee met and rejected them. Since that time, MMB has negotiated additional agreements with many of the other unions and has submitted three of those contracts to the subcommittee, which met earlier this week and recommends their approval. The bill in front of you would approve the original two contracts with AFSCME and MAPE, the additional three contracts that have been negotiated, and then two compensation plans for employees in the executive branch who are not represented. Commissioner Holmes is going to talk about the specifics of what's included in those contracts and plans.
Before you continue, Ms. Holmes, is there any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Senator Stump.
Just curious, how many plans would if we pass this, does that take care of all of the different plans, or do we still have some that are still out?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump,
Mr. Hubinger,
the bill would ratify five labor contracts. There are five additional, three coming from MNSCU, and there are an additional three compensation plans. It's anticipated that several of those will be considered later during this session.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd point out that these contracts are for the current biennium that ends in 6 months.
Any other questions? Ms. Holmes, Barbara Holmes, Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations, MMB, thank you for coming today.
Mr. Chair,
members
of the committee, good afternoon. Just to clarify what Mr. Hubinger said or add a little specificity to it, there are, five.
You should probably identify yourself before you.
Figured because you did, I didn't need to say my name one more time. Barbara Holmes, Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations at Minnesota Management and Budget.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have five labor contracts in front of you for approval and two compensation plans. There are still four other collective bargaining agreements that are not. We have tentative agreements with three of them, but they're out for their members for ratification, and we have not finalized an agreement with the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association. Those particular contracts, when they're settled and if they're ratified by their members, will be before you sometime later in the session. There were no significant language changes in most of the contracts. There were minor changes, some tweaking, some clarification. Just to give you an example of some of the, when I say language provisions, what I mean, we had to make modifications in the contracts because the legislature passed a statute that modified the paid leave that employees can have when they vote, and so we needed to modify our labor contracts to comply with that statute. There were also some federal law changes that came through with the Affordable Care Act that impacted some provisions in our health insurance plans. We had to make amendments there. Most of the changes took place in the insurance article. I think you all know that the state employee group insurance program, which we refer to as CGIP, covers all the employees of the state, the judicial branch, the legislative branch, the executive branch. You're all covered by this program. In addition to the changes that we had to make because of the Affordable Care Act, we also made changes in the insurance provisions this year that effectively shift some of the costs that were normally paid by the employer to the employees, specifically things like office copays, emergency copays, some co-insurance amounts, some first dollar deductibles. Those amounts were increased, and again, shifting about $7.9 million in insurance costs over the next two insurance years to employees. And this is the same plan, I might note, that the Legislative Coordinating Commission recently approved for your employees. The wage increases are similar in all of the contracts and the two compensation plans. Essentially, a 2% across the board will be given to all employees effective January 2nd of this month. So there isn't any sort of retroactive across the board increase that goes back to the beginning of this contract. Effectively, that will mean that state employees in fiscal year 10, 11, 12, and the first 6 months of 13 received a zero across-the-board increase, received no across-the-board increase. The collective bargaining agreements and the compensation plans also provide for annual step increases. They're based on performance. Those step increases are tied to salary schedules, and they can amount to anything from a 2.7% increase. And in some labor contracts, the range is 2.7 to 4.0. If the employee happens to be at the top of their salary range, they are not eligible for those sorts of steps. And approximately 50% of the employees in state government are at the top of their range, so they will not be getting step increases and will merely be eligible for the 2% across the board that, again, is effective at the beginning of this month.
Excuse me. Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want at least some clarifying. I mean, the average public or a private person, I would say, when you say 0% increase, they think, well, they haven't gotten anything. But you're saying that at least 50% of the state workers have gotten 2.7 to 4% increase. Is that yearly steps or is that every other year? How does that work?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, these increases are on an annual basis, and they require that all employees have at least satisfactory performance.
Senator Gazelka.
So to be clear, with the Great Recession that we've all been through, a good number, it's not been zero. It's been 2.7 to 4% increase every year.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's correct for about 50% of state employees.
Okay. And so when we add, Mr. Chair, so when we add the 2%, it's above that. So they now would get 4.7 to 6% increase this year.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Senator, that's correct.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, could you just take those years of 10, 11, and 12 and give us an idea of how many state employees we had in 2010 and how many we have in 2012.
Ms.
Holmes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I'm sorry, but I don't have that. We usually refer to it as FTEs, full-time equivalent employees that we track, and we do have a report that we produce. I don't have that with me. If you want me to get that to you and or the committee or have a presentation at some other time about that, I just don't have it off the top of my head.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, the rationale that I was thinking about is that you mentioned that there was $7.9 million of insurance costs that were shifted to employees. And I think I remember reading that between 2008, and I'm not sure about the other years, but in the last few years, we had a fairly significant fall off of public employees. So I was just wondering if you took the 7.9 and the increases that you mentioned, the 2.7 and to 4%, are employees ahead, even or behind, in terms of overall pay that they would receive?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I don't think I've quite analyzed it in the way you have. The point I like to bring up that we all knew about is 19,000 of the executive branch employees were laid off for 3 weeks in the first in during the shutdown, which was the beginning of this contract period, and lost like $65 million in wages. So that period of time has a specific dollar amount attached to it. So that really evens the playing field for a great number of them.
Interesting.
Senator Deems.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Holmes, can you tell me, you mentioned in your testimony here that, and I don't know the number exact number of years, like 3 to 5 years, that the employees did not receive any raise other than steps. Were there any of the bargaining units that took a decrease during that time period other than
Ms.
steps?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it was a 3.5-year period where there was no across-the-board increase, and in one of those years, fiscal year 10, they did not receive step increases either. That was what we call a hard freeze year.
Mr. Chair, just Senator to follow
Deems.
Up, Ms. Holmes, nobody took a decrease, though, is that correct, in any of the bargaining units? Did they take a salary reduction?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no.
Thank you.
Chairman.
Senator Metz.
Yeah, my notes tell me that the last across-the-board raise was goes back to 2008 and ratified in 2009. So it's 2008 is the year we have to look at. So that's where over 50% of the employees did not receive anything because they didn't get the bump in the lane. So I think we have to keep that in mind, that over 50% way back to 2008 received zero. Sure, some got steps, we understand that, but let's put the thing in perspective. And
all right, any other questions? Ms. Holmes, go ahead, continue.
That was essentially the
okay.
substance of my presentation.
Any other questions?
One more. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if you know this. I saw some data from the Taxpayer Association that said that our state employees, on average, were paid $59,415, which was seventh highest in the nation. And if you factored in cost of living, they're fifth highest. Does anybody have any data on where that will bring them compared to other states?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, and I don't have that study in front of me, but I know one of the issues or one thing you need to keep in mind in that analysis that they did, they picked out about a dozen different classes in state governments around the country, and so the comparisons are based on those. So I don't know how... I don't know if they're completely telling, and I do not know what these increases would do to that analysis.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. This is either, Ms. Holmes or Senator Eaton. We all want our state employees to be adequately compensated and paid. That's not the question. I want a raise and pay increase for the employees as well. The question here is I'd take several things into consideration. One is, we still have a $1 billion hole in our budget we have to deal with. All these contracts, once ratified, could be multiples of hundreds of millions of dollars to our budget, and I don't know if that's been factored into our forecast. I believe it has, though. The economy globally, nationally, uncertainty. We just saw yesterday we had the dip in our GDP. It puts us at risk. We don't know what that holds for the coming months and year. Minnesotans, as you know, have been unemployed, underemployed, quit looking. I've got neighbors that have quit looking. Many have taken decreases in their pay as well and haven't seen increases for years. I got an email from a constituent the other day. She said her husband's had 1% in 3 years, and she's received nothing. Apples to apples, oranges to oranges, we can keep doing that. But given all that, it just seems to me, Mr. Chair, it's just risky business to just blanket increase. We want something. So in that sense, you know, we could modify. This could be modified where some get raises, or we could just say, well, let's do something with the health care piece, the insurance premiums. I know that Met Council employees pay part of their single coverage for the employees. They pay their own. They pay a percentage of that. Private sector, the average premiums, the employees pay 21% on average of the premium cost for single coverage for themselves, for the employee. But our state employees in this contract are asked to give nothing for single coverage. 15% pay for dependents, but nothing for the employee. Employee does not have to contribute anything for themselves. That's not how it is in the private sector. It's not how it is in with the Met Council. So, again, I'm just looking for some reasonableness here, not saying take away the pay increases. We're saying fine, but given the condition of our economy, the uncertainty of all that, would it be wise to continue down that path? So I don't know if you want to take amendments now or is now appropriate.
I think we will. I just wanted to make one comment. You know, in a very high service state, and we are a high service state, we probably all agree to that. We're amongst the top 10 lowest in employees per capita, and you know that's a pretty significant piece of when you start talking about you know how much we pay and everything else. So, but is there any other discussion before we accept amendments? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree. We need to keep that. Again, we're just looking for some reasonableness, some modification to this to reduce the impact of the budget somewhat and bring it into line with the private sector and with the Met Council with what they're doing. With that, I'd offer the A7 amendment. And what this
amendment?
What this simply says is that the
why don't we wait till we get it? I'll get it, Senator.
Just as an aside, a little more data. We all like data. BLS had a number average total compensation for government workers was about $41 an hour, and for private sector was $28. Again, you can parse that however you want, but that is the average number. Minnesota average FTE pay for average FTE was $73,000. Again, you know. We want reasonable, we want fair, we want good compensation, but we have to take consideration our budget and the constituents that we serve.
Everybody have the E7? Okay, let us, why don't you explain this to us, Senator?
Mr. Chair, some may have seen this before or heard of it already. This is just asking, again, to bring some reasonableness into this. We're not asking for 9%. We're not asking for a 21% payment of the premiums. But this amendment simply asks the state employees to pay 5% of the premium cost for their own employee coverage. That's well below the private sector average and even below what Met Council is asking. So that's what this amendment does.
Okay. You have the A7 amendment. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Senator Stump.
How could somebody just give me an idea how this fits in with the contract negotiations that occur?
Senator Eaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Stump, the terms of health care benefits are not negotiated at the legislature. They're negotiated through collective bargaining between Minnesota Management and Budget and the respective union representatives. I find this amendment totally inappropriate.
Mr.
Other discussions?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Chamberlain.
I wouldn't say it's inappropriate. You might disagree.
She said it.
You might.
It is.
You might disagree with it, but it's certainly below the average of premiums at other places. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gonzalez.
Mr. Chair, do we have any idea how much this would save the state?
Does anybody, as Senator Gazalka's asked, if we know how much this would save the state? Senator Chamberlain?
I'm sorry. I didn't have time to draft that number. Something Senator would save us something.
Do we know how much this would be additional cost to employees?
It would
Senator
be,
Chamberlain?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dietzick, the additional cost, the average dollar, is 5% of their wages. I think what the Met Council had on the number in front of me was a year or something, $460 or something, if I recall, from the Met Council.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to echo Senator Eaton's comment about where these agreements are negotiated. They are negotiated between the employer and the employees' representatives, and not at the legislature, and with all due respect to wanting to save money and so on, when we have amendments that we don't know what they cost, when these employees have gone without 18 months, talking a lot about all the ramifications and the costs and of these contracts, to accept an amendment without knowing all the ins and outs, without talking with the employees, without talking to the employers, and just the legislature inserting herself, I'm very uncomfortable with that. And we know these very same employees during the shutdown, lost tens of millions of dollars in compensation to buy their families groceries and pay their bills. And so this negotiated contract, I think the legislature does well to review it, to monitor it, to question it, and then to ratify the process and the conclusion. And I respect anybody wanting to have savings to the state, but that's not the only side that we're looking on here. There's a human cost, and this is negotiated. This is something that is not just it's not just one side hands it to the other and says, these are our demands, say yes. Either side. This is negotiated. And I think it's done in good faith, and that the legislature should, unless there is an absolutely outrageous result, which is not the case here, it's a very modest increase for our employees, that the legislature should ratify the result. And I respect the opinion of those who differ.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I just wanted to remind the committee that our state negotiators actually did a very fine job. This contract will save $7.9 million to the state in an increased cost that will be incurred through the insurance by the members. So this is we've already saved $7.9, and I think that speaks for itself.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Eaton and Senator Rest. Appreciate the comment. I did have some numbers, or I should have checked with the staff. Number of 1 year on average, it would cost per month about $46 at this 5%. Be $46 a month for an employee. That comes out to about $562 a year. The biennium cost at the 515 level, 5% for employee coverage, 15% for dependent. The total biennium cost is $22 million total. So it'll be $46 a month for the employee, and total savings to the state is $22.8 million, just for the record. Thank you.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, this is such an interesting discussion because we care for those that are doing the work, and yet trying to figure out how do we pay an appropriate amount, and it's not easy. And so we're just trying to raise some of the issues. And regarding the health insurance, this is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but it said the private sector employee pays about 21% of the premium, and the public sector, you know, what we're talking about. And so I think that's why we're raising some of these issues. Yes, they're negotiated. I get that. But, you know, we should at least realize that if you're comparing it to the private sector, both wages and now benefits are quite a bit different.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out with the numbers that we received from Senator Chamberlain that we already take out the dependent amount of the premium, so that those numbers would not change with your proposal.
Right.
And I do think it's important to realize that we have a process with negotiated contracts, and that for us to get in the middle of it is totally inappropriate.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Chamberlain, I'm not going to support this right now because I think we do have, like Senator Ress said, there is a process. But I know in the past in my other jobs, I have worked with the unions to help save health care dollars, and we have another contract coming up right around the corner. And so I think having discussions with them about ways to save health care for all of us, and then also to make their members more healthy. I know at other jobs I've had, we had a lot of discussions on how we can make members more healthy to reduce health care costs overall. And I've actually had wandering in the halls here some conversations with some of the union members saying, can we do some of those things? A lot of private corporations offer, through their insurance, offer gym memberships. Some places like General Mills even have a gym right on site. We're not private industry, and so that might not be something we can do. But I think looking at creative options to just make our employees healthier and make them healthier is something. Again, the next contract's right around the corner, and so I'm not going to support this because I think there was this process and they negotiated out, and I'm going to support that. But I think they would even be open to finding more ways for all of us to save money. Thank you.
Is that a rest? Did you still want to speak?
Well, yes, and it's not necessarily to this contract, but I was visited today by the president of Hennepin Technical College, which a lot of my constituents attend. And she related to me that just last year alone, they had 10 finalists for positions that they had gone through the process to try and hire, and all 10 people turned them down because they said, we can't afford to subsidize the state by taking that low a compensation package when we can do so much better based on our skill levels, et cetera, experience, education, background, whatever it was, in the private sector. So, you know, there's two sides, or more than two sides. There's lots of sides to what is adequate compensation. And we do lose very, very highly skilled opportunities for we lose a lot of opportunities for highly skilled people in our education system because they just can't afford to subsidize a state government in that way.
Other discussion on the A7? Senator Chamberlain?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the comments. With that, I'll just call have a roll call on this one.
Ooh, good. I was going to do that.
All right,
Senator Chamberlain has presented the A7 amendment. There'll be a roll call. Clerk will call the roll. All
right. Chairman Saxhog?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Champion? Senator Cohen? Senator Dames?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
No.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Stump?
No.
There being five yeses, four noes. Right.
Amendment. The amendment fails. Any other discussion? Floor amendments?
Could your secretary please announce the roll call?
Five no's, four yeses.
Thank you very much. Just for the record.
Okay. So we have discussion or amendments?
I have one more.
Senator Chamberlain.
This one will be, you may have heard of this one before. A6 amendment.
Can we get out the A6 amendments, please?
We all know it by heart.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm sorry. I know it's serious.
I haven't seen it.
Do you have it now?
You could talk about it.
Where is it? What is it?
Everybody have it?
You'll support this.
We want to nip you.
We have the A6 amendment presented by Senator Chamberlain. Senator Chamberlain, would you explain the amendment to us,
please? Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment is for those of us who serve elected office. It simply says that we will contribute 5% of our paid to pay for premiums, and then 15% for the dependents. So elected legislators here and on the House side would pay part of our premium coverage for health care. That's in a nutshell. 5 and 15. So the 15 would be in line with the union contracts for dependents, and the 5% would obviously get us contributing to the to paying our own premium health care costs.
Discussion on the A6.
Question.
Senator Rest.
I don't know if it was you or Senator Gazelka that said that the average state employee compensation is $59,000. What's the average, including session per diem, for salary compensation for legislators?
Pretty low.
Starting at $31,000.
Somebody have to answer that question?
I know the salary is what?
Senator Stump.
$31,800 or something?
$31,140.
And you probably add on, Mr. Chairman, maybe $6,000-$7,000 per diem for the average person.
Yeah. I think it was about 14.
You qualify years. For food stamps.
Just to keep,
we always want, we always want
Mr.
To
Chairman, just keeping that in mind as we're considering this amendment. And, you know, I've heard one person in this body say that this is not a real job. Well, I beg to differ. I think this is not only a real job, it's an important job, and you can hardly work at it part-time. Most of us make ourselves available 7 days a week if a constituent calls. We don't say, sorry, don't work on Saturdays. Sorry, don't work on Sundays. Don't work at night. Don't work
Senator
early in the morning.
When was the last time you had a raise?
12 years ago, 14.
In aught or something, you know, way.
Other discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, I think that what Senator Rest is bringing up is valid discussion. On the health insurance, I brought up how we compare deductible-wise to the private sector, and that's why I would support this. But I also think it would be wise for the bodies, both House and Senate, to find a way to properly look at the salary structures, because to have the legislative bodies decide their own raise, I don't think that's the appropriate way, but that is what it is constitutionally. So just throwing that out there.
Senator Gazelka, it's probably why we don't have a raise.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
We actually do have a compensation council, and it's kind of like, I don't know how I describe being appointed to it, but I'm appointed to it, and it doesn't make me particularly happy to be there. But their job is to recommend appropriate salary levels, compensation levels for the legislature, the governor, and so forth, and then that only needs to be ratified by the legislature. And of course, none of us can vote on a salary increase that affects us during our term, so that's not available now. But I think there are a number of us that would very much be interested on both sides of the aisle in compensation reform. And I'm perfectly happy to get rid of the per diem system and just give people an adequate, or what I believe is an adequate, compensation in the form of salary and, you know, whatever other benefits work, and forego per diem, and quite frankly, forego it in the interim, too. You
know. Senator Stump.
Have an annual salary.
Mr. Senator Chairman, Senator Gazelka, I was going to recommend that we put a constitutional amendment on the ballot, but then after last election, I'm a little hesitant to do that.
I don't think we would campaign against that.
All right. Do we have other discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to mention that what we're discussing here are approving contracts for our public employee unions, and the amount that legislators pay in insurance is hardly congruent with that discussion, as far as I'm concerned.
Senator Chamberlain?
Final comment. I realize that, and it doesn't impact the contract, but it certainly, if we're about fairness and equity and understanding and working on the budget and making sure things are in the right order and the right places, it's a good conversation to have. I think I understood what I was getting into when I came here. I didn't have any illusions that I was going to get wealthy and or anything like that. But I certainly do understand some fairness and equity, and if I'm going to tell my constituents I'm going to. First 2 years I was here, I didn't take per diem. But if I'm going to be fair and tell my constituents I'm going to do the best job I can for them, well, then this we lead by example. So that's what this demonstrates, leading by example. Will we take a step and say we'll do our little part to help reduce budget problems and pay our fair share? Whether we make $31,000 a year, or I'm sure that the low salary people out there doing those jobs, they're paying their part too. So that's all I'm looking at this. But thank you, and I'll ask for roll calls. Sure.
Other discussion on the A6 amendment? If not, the clerk will take the roll on the A6 amendment.
Chairman Saxog?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Champion? Senator Cohen? Senator Dames?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
No.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Chairman, is it?
The A6 fails 5-4. Okay, is there any other discussion on the?
Chairman.
Yeah.
Seeing no further
Senator
discussion.
Senator Metzen.
Seeing no further discussion, I'd like to move that Senate File Number 58 be recommended to pass and forwarded to the Finance Committee.
Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 58 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. Discussion.
Roll call.
Ask for roll call. Any other discussion? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Chairman Saxog?
Yes.
Senator Dietzick?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Champion? Senator Cohen? Senator Dames?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Metzen?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
By a vote of 5-4, Senate File 58 passes, and it will be referred to the Finance Committee. Any other business before this particular committee? If not, just make note that we're going to have a History Center tour on Tuesday. So we'll look forward to that, and then we'll begin budget overviews Thursday. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, say a history tour? History tour?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
And you'll get more information. Okay. Any other business before us? Not, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the one that's...